welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for October 10th. This is brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, back in Tokyo today, and with me is Jim Allen. How's it going?
It's going well, and I'm glad I didn't just get off a long flight, but you sound good, you look good, and I think we're ready to rock and roll tonight.
Yeah, I got a little bit refreshed, not all that much, but it's always nice to be home, so that was good. And while I was back home, I did an interview with DJ Holton of the Yomiuri Giants, and then we're going to talk about round one of the PLCS and CLCS and some other topics, so let's start clearing the bases. All right, so I was able to get a hold of DJ Holton. Get a hold of Holton.
Holton Caulfield? That would be the pitcher in the rye, then.
That'd be the pitcher in the rye. But I'm going to ask Simon to make us some new noises or some new sounds in the off season.
Some uggs.
Maybe one like doing yo 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 when you make a bad joke.
Oh, well, we wouldn't have any time left for the show then.
I was going to say. We'd have to play that so often. But, you know, normally we interview ball players at the field, if it's practice, if it's the practice field or the ballpark or the dome, wherever. And DJ was really generous in donating some of his downtime to appear on the podcast. So we're really grateful and we're really appreciative of that. Thank you very much, DJ. Now, they won the Yomiuri Giants won the championship. They really cruised in the second half. They really poured it on. I think their last game was today or yesterday. What did they finish at? Today.
I don't know what the record is. It's meaningless at this stage. Yeah. Pitched well, and the game was tied 1-1. He gave up a solo homer to a Mr. Journeyman, Shotaro Ide, and Kenji Yano hit a 10th inning sayonara homer.
And who was the starter, you said?
Holton.
Oh, okay, he started today. So he pitched well again today.
He did pitch well.
Good for him. Good for him. He, like most of the pitchers, he seemed to be a lot better in the second half, but as you will hear in the interview, he credits the batters for getting it going and getting some runs on the board now. Well, isn't it like a pitcher?
Well, that is like, we talked about it a couple of shows ago, that basically the problem with the Giants in the first 2 weeks of the season was that they weren't scoring any runs at all.
Right.
And essentially once they started scoring runs, once they got into interleague, it was lights out.
Yeah, now he's not a lights out kind of a pitcher or a shutdown kind of a pitcher in his record in four seasons in Japan is 54-35, and that would be including today because he would obviously have gotten a no decision, I'm assuming, if he didn't go nine innings, which he rarely goes nine innings.
Well, he had a great, of course, he led he tied for the Pacific League lead in wins last year, largely because the Hawks are scoring about 27.5 runs every time he stepped on the field. Okay, I'm joking. They were scoring about five or six runs a game when he pitched. It was pretty impressive.
Yeah, they were.
He got a bunch of strikeouts, and that was a real nice combination.
That's the perfect combination right there. Lots of good pitching, quality pitching, and then runs scored is going to get you what you have to do in a good outing. But he's not this shutdown guy. Like I said, his ERA this season is around 2.5. Not fantastic. He was 12-8. And in fact, he was a few games early on. He was a couple games under 500. Now, me and the wins and losses, I don't really care. In fact, I want him to get rid of the wins and losses for pitchers. I just, a guy can pitch.
You've come a long way, John.
Since last year when I said this at the end of the season?
No, since a couple of years ago when the whole Felix Hernandez, we took part in the discussion about whether Felix Hernandez should be the Cy Young Award winner, basically because he prevented a lot of runs.
Mm-hmm. And what did I say at that time?
You were one of those guys who you were sort of on the borderline between yes, you were sort of like saying yes, I understand, but wins are important, and I think wins are important. But there's only so much a pitcher can do.
Right. I think wins are important in this way. I mean, the object of the game when you go out there, especially as a starter, is to beat the other team, not put up good numbers.
Absolutely.
And that's why they're important. If you get a lot of wins, it shows that you have been out there competing really well and you've been able to pitch deep enough in the games to get credit for this victory.
5 innings.
And your team has scored. Well, you know, if you can't pitch a whole season of just throwing 5 innings and then win 17 or 18 games. I don't think it's really possible because the games are going to be decided when you're sitting on the bench.
Agreed.
And if you're wearing out the bullpen that much, the likelihood is that you're not going to win that many games. It's possible.
Oh, well, I obviously that's the case. I mean, you obviously have to – anyway, first of all, I mean, you just have to talk about the minimum. But, yeah, the thing is that there are, so many things that go into it. You have to make your pitches. And again, I think I'll go back to the point this is just my theory, but the fact is a starting pitcher is a little bit like what's the difference between a starting pitcher and a time bomb? And the answer is nothing. It's just that the best pitchers are the ones who go off least often.
Right, the duds.
Yeah, exactly. And a starting pitcher is a guy who doesn't ruin games. The fewer games you ruin, that's the best starting pitchers. That's quite a challenge. I make it sound like anybody could do it, and that's obviously not the case. You put me out, most people are bombs every time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's an easy thing to lose. maybe put it that way. It's so easy to lose. You can lose every which way from Sunday. So winning is not necessarily not losing, but if you don't, if you don't give the game away, you got a chance to win.
Exactly. And DJ doesn't give games away. He keeps his team in games a lot, and he probably could have won a lot more than 12 games. And he could have lost a lot fewer than 8, but that's just the way it worked out for him this season. And like you said, last season he tied for the Pacific League lead in victories. So, I mean, they're wishy-washy. You can't really go off wins too much. I don't put all that much stock in them, but the media here does, as you will hear in the interview. So let's take a listen. All right, our guest this week is DJ Holton of the Yomiuri Giants. Thank you very much for joining us, and congratulations on the championship.
Thank you very much. Thank you. It's good to be here.
Yeah, you guys did a good job. Now, it seems like the media members expected your team to, like, shut out all the opponents as you went along in the season, but your starters did become very dominant in the second half. Was it just a matter of time before they got going?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we had a good team from the start. You know, we brought in, Sugiuchi and Murata from the Bay Stars. So, I mean, I think just expectations were kind of high, and I think at the beginning we didn't really play all that well together, and I think we all got comfortable. I don't know what it was, but we just kind of all clicked, I think around interleague time or something like that. So after that happened, we were pretty much a pretty good team. We pitched well, we hit well, we did it all at the same time. So it was, we just kind of went on a tear after that.
Was it a matter of making adjustments for the starters?
I mean, I guess so, yeah. I mean, it's hard to tell really for me just because, I mean, I know what I did different. I think I was just getting comfortable. It's just such a new environment with this team. And,
sure.
You know, I was just getting comfortable, and that's how I was able to do a little better. And I think we just weren't really hitting in the beginning. And then all of a sudden we just started hitting a lot. All these guys, Abe started to do what he's been doing, and
yeah,
Chono and Sakamoto. So, I mean, once we have those three guys going, I think we're pretty good.
Yeah, everybody struggled, it seemed, hitting at the beginning of the season, and then teams started to turn it around. Actually, I made a comment about it on the show, but anyway, we'll put that aside. Now, as far as your season goes, you were under 500 for a while, I guess a little bit below 500 for much of the first half, but then you piled up a lot of wins in the second half. Now, what changed for you?
Like I said, just probably getting comfortable. Just the environment's so different here. I think getting comfortable with the catcher, with Abe, I think just – the environment, they got the media, asking you why you didn't win after games, and asking you what's wrong, or asking you if you're injured, and, I'm out there in the outfield, and all the media guys are, like, watching, and, asking me why I was wearing a elbow wrap or something like that on my elbow, like an elbow sleeve.
Uh-huh.
Just little, kind of annoying stuff like that. They just kind of get on you if you're not winning. So I think I just tried to... I tried to avoid them a little more, and then I think I just kind of got back on track after that.
Is that the biggest adjustment you made?
Yeah. I mean, I think also, too, like, you know, just the environment of the team, like the coaches and, you know, stuff like that. All the teammates are great and all, but I think just the coaches kind of, they kind of create a different environment here. They, you know, we lose a game or two and we have like a long meeting and stuff like that. And, you know, it's just, it's like, you know, I really think the Giants, they expect to go, you know, 144-0. So I really don't think they expect us to lose any game.
Right. Yep. Yep. That's the way it goes. Now, how do you evaluate your season personally?
You know, I'm happy with it. I think I threw well, you know, obviously, you know, second half or, you know, after interleague, I felt like I threw well. I felt like I threw, like I did last year with the Hawks. So, I mean, I think overall, you know, I felt like I did well and, you know, the coaches and everyone, you know, they seem like they're happy with me. So, I mean, I think that's always a positive once you can, you know, win over the Japanese coaches. So I think, you know, doing a good job and heading in the right direction.
Now, you after looking back after the season ends, you guys are going to have a very similar season to what the SoftBank Hawks had last season when you were pitching for them. Does this remind you of anything you experienced last year with the Hawks?
Yeah, definitely, because last year we hit well and we pitched well. We had a really good bullpen. I think the biggest thing is with last year's team and this year's team, we play really good defense. Mm-hmm. You know, we have a really good shortstop, and our defense is really good. Even Murata is really good at third base. And, you know, also we have a really good bullpen. So I think those two things were the ones I really noticed. Last year with the Hawks, you know, we had Falkenberg and Morifuku and all those guys, and they were unhittable, you know, in the later innings. So I think if the starters, we can go six or seven, you know, other than that, I think, the game's almost over because our bullpen's so good and, you know, we play good defense, so, I mean, not many runs are getting by.
Yeah, I thought so, too. Now, what do you think about the way that you were used last year in the postseason by the Hawks?
As far as, like, starting game four?
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't have a problem with it. I mean, because, you know, last year we had Wada, Suguchi, and Setsu. I mean, all those guys are really good, three really good pitchers. So, I mean, you know, I don't take it personal or anything like that, so I don't really mind as – just as long as I'm out there pitching at some point. But, you know, it's, you know, you're in Japan, and, you know, so I know it's just kind of how it works. You know, you just pitch whenever, you know, they want you to. So I didn't really want to start anything about it last year. It wasn't a big deal. I mean, especially, like I said, those other three guys are really good pitchers, and I think they're better than me.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, how do you expect to be used by the Giants in this year's playoffs?
I don't know. I think I'm starting game two or game three, but they haven't decided yet. So, I mean, I don't know. I don't get surprised anymore. So I don't really, you know, come to expect anything. If I expect something and then it just usually doesn't happen. So I just kind of go with the flow and just get ready and, you know, assuming it will be one of 2 days. So I don't know.
Okay. All right. Now, what do you think about the playoff format for the Climax Series with the home team, especially the second stage with the home team getting all the games at home and the one game advantage and all that?
I mean, I think it's stupid. I mean, I just don't understand. I don't know. I mean, all the games are at home and a one game advantage, and it's just, I don't understand why we just don't go to the, I think like they used to do. They used to just, the winner of the Pacific League and the winner of Central League just go straight to the Japan Series, because that's pretty much what they're doing. They're just giving, I mean, what if, you know, what if the first place team and the second place team are only like a game or two apart, and then you're going to give the first place team that advantage? That just doesn't seem really that fair to me.
Yeah, I've complained about it personally for a long time, and it's hard to explain to people outside of Japan what's going on. So
yeah, I was even trying to explain it to our new foreigners this year, and they were pretty surprised too. You know, tell them how it works and how all our games are in Tokyo, and they didn't understand that either. So I don't know.
All right.
A lot of questions.
And not very many answers. What about Shinosuke Abe and the season he's put together?
I think since I've been in Japan, I've never seen a hitter do this. He's just, I mean, he gets hits. He hits the ball the other way. He obviously hits for power, and he hits when guys are on base. He's got all his RBIs. And also he catches, you know, he catches a lot. He catches, you know, close to every day, and just going out there catching and calling a game and then hitting, being able to do what he's doing. I think he's hitting over 340 right now. So, I mean, that's unbelievable. I mean, he's just, he's kind of a complete package. He can hit, you know, and obviously hit for power and average. And it's just, it's a shame. I don't think he's going to get the triple crown. I think he's going to miss it by a few home runs. But I mean, just a great hitter.
Yeah, I was looking since I'm in the States right now, and the big thing is Miguel Cabrera getting the triple crown in the American League with the Detroit Tigers, and I was hoping we could have one in the Central League as well. But what has really impressed you about him? Has it been the catching? Has it been the hitting? What has it been exactly?
I think just the hitting. I mean, when he's, you know, he's up there, and he, I guess if he sees a certain pitch, he knows, you know, which ones he can go for a home, you know, he tries to hit a home run or so. But, you know, I think some teams just, you know, power hitters like that, they'll just pitch you away, you know, fastballs away or whatever. And then if they do that, I think he realizes that, and then he just hits the ball to left field. So I think as a pitcher, you don't know how to get him out, because if you throw him away, he's just going to take a single. And then, mm-hmm. you know, obviously if you try and come in or some up and in or something like that, he's just going to, especially in the Tokyo Dome, and he's going to hit it out of the yard. So he's a tough hitter to get out, and he swings hard, and, you know, he's something special here.
I don't not know it. We talked about it last year that actually Jim pointed out, and because of his defense and the fact that he plays catcher, that he's so much more valuable than anybody, even if they put up the same numbers.
And I tell you what, every time, too, a guy tries to steal off of him, I mean, he may not be out all the time, but he always puts the ball right there. The ball is always just right there for the shortstop or second baseman just to swipe the tag right there. You know, his throws aren't erratic or anything like that. He's really accurate there.
Yeah, I actually think he's gotten better in the past, you know, couple seasons than when I saw him 3 years ago. So,
really?
Because I've seen him a lot. But the last question I have for you today is, what are some of the challenges? Because we expect to see either, I'm sure you're going to see either the Dragons or the Swallows in the second stage of the Climax Series. So what are the challenges with the Dragons lineup, and what are the challenges with the Swallows lineup?
With the Dragons, I haven't really pitched too well against the Dragons in the past. I don't know what it is. I mean, they got Blanco and Wada and, you know, Marino, and they got some good hitters there that still can hit the ball out of the yard. And I think they take some more pitchers. I think they're a little more patient up there. They have some, you know, veteran guys in the lineup, so I think they're a little more patient off of me. So I have to really, like, you know, be around the zone, and I think that kind of challenges me a little bit. And then the Swallows are... they're kind of a scary team, I think, because they got Millage and Valentin, and they got that Hatakeyama or something in the middle. So,
yeah.
I mean, they got a pretty good lineup, too, kind of like a sneaky good lineup. So, I mean, I think if they get hot at the right time, they could be a pretty tough team.
Yep, Hatakeyama or something. That's what I usually call him. But, yeah, we appreciate you joining us, man, and thanks for taking time in your private time to talk to us. We really enjoyed the chat today, and we are excited about the playoffs, and we hope you are, too.
Yeah, thank you. No problem.
All right, have a good one. Thanks a lot. Okay, well, again, thanks a bunch, DJ, for taking the time out to talk on Skype. We really appreciate it, and I think the listeners appreciate it.
Yeah, really sharp. I think DJ, if he ever just, you know, whatever time he decides that being in another profession is preferable to being on the mound, I think he could definitely be an analyst. He's got a very a good way with words, and I think he's very succinct and to the point, and can always use more of that.
Yeah. From me? No, wait a minute. From you? No.
No, just in general.
So what caught your ear? What was the big deal? What was the big thing for this interview?
Well, I think, yeah, the major adjustment being tuning out the media.
Yeah, wasn't that great?
I love it.
He just tried to avoid them more, and that's when he started winning games.
There's something to be said about, you know, anything can be a distraction, and the media certainly can be. So that was fascinating. The different things in his game, I think, yeah, learning the pitchers and talking about how things came together in the second half. I think the other thing that kind of struck me was the difference between the Dragons and the Swallows, which we'll get to in a minute, but sneaky good. Yeah, that's the Swallows. They sneak up on you when every time you write them off, they seem to come back and do something good. I mean, the Dragons and the Swallows, interesting. His perceptions were interesting. He had better luck against the Swallows this year than he did the Dragons. the team was a powerhouse, and the comparison with the Hawks is perfectly appropriate. I mean, last year the Giants scored four runs, average of four runs a game in his starts. I mean, throw today's out the window, but because it's not in there.
Right.
But yeah, he was well run supported after the first couple of weeks, and he did have. I know he had a couple of kind of flaky starts early on.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe is I'm not going to speculate when that was. I'd have to look at the record specifically, but yeah, it was a very good season from him. He had perhaps flaky run support in the sense that he got a lot of runs sometimes and none the next time. The Giants were especially in the first half of the season, in the very beginning of the season, they didn't score at all. Then they went to scoring now and then, and at the end of the season, they went to just scoring all the time.
Yeah, they just went mad, and he was one of the guys who benefited from it. It's too bad Sawamura wasn't back up on the first team to benefit from it, even though when they did bring him up, he figured out a way to blow a lead and give up some runs and stuff. But, yeah, I missed this whole past week. I tried to wake up in the middle of the night and watch some games, but I would inevitably fall asleep doing it, so it was tough. But I tried. I gave it the effort. I gave it the college try. So, yeah, I found that really interesting that he pointed to the batters and said, well, you know, we started scoring, you know, we weren't scoring early, but that, you know, you talked about the first 2 weeks and then you said they started scoring now and again, but I think as well as he pitched, in the second half, I don't think he pitched that way in the first half. And of course I don't have the numbers to support that, but that's the way I saw it. Having watched most of the games, I think he gave up fewer runs for sure, and he gave up fewer base runners, and he just kept the guys in it, and he gave them a chance. But when you got a guy like Abe, and you saw how he, or you heard how he lauded Shinosuke Abe in his play, and it was, and I said, what was the thing that stood out for you? And he said, well, you know, the way he hit. So it wasn't the catching so much as the way he hit, you know, and that's, I think you remember last year when he was on the show, he basically threw Toru Hosokawa under the bus by saying he doesn't hit much. And he didn't hit much, but I mean, I wouldn't say it, but he did throw him under the bus a little bit in that respect.
I throw somebody under the bus a little bit. You kind of dangle his arm under there.
An appendage here, a toe, maybe a finger. But, yeah, he did come back and say, I'm sorry, DJ did come back at the end and say he liked the way that Abe was throwing out runners. And I remember he had a bad shoulder a couple, 3 years ago and wasn't throwing very well. And I think all that's healed because he's much better behind the plate. He's much better all season long. And obviously DJ thought the same thing that he pointed it out, during the interview. So that was good.
Yeah. Well, I think it's hard to, I mean, Abe's a good catcher, okay? But he had, when you have a season like he does, I mean, hitters rarely have the season he had, so.
Any hitter.
Yeah, exactly. That's my point. So I think it's just common sense to do it that way. Okay, now, let's see. Just since we're talking on it, DJ Holton, I just picked a random date in the middle of the season. First 13 games, he was 6-6 with a 3.14 ERA.
Okay.
Now the rest of the season, he was. Don't give me a drum roll because I couldn't handle it.
Okay.
He was 6-2 in his last 11 games with a 1.83 ERA. So, I guess shutting out the reporters was a big thing for him.
So I was right. I mean, it's basically what I had seen, and you know what I do is I'll go through and. You know, I have all the starts and I can look at them and I just looked at them and said, hey, look, he's given up a lot less in terms of on the scoreboard. I think he pitched well in terms of his whip too, but in the second half was better. So yeah, avoiding reporters, that's a good way to up your game. I guess if he tells all his teammates that, they won't talk during the entire postseason and they'll win it easily. They won't lose a game.
Oh, well, yeah, could be.
No, there's no way they can avoid the press in the postseason. Sorry, that's never going to happen.
Well, you don't want to avoid the press. You just want to avoid the morons.
Well, then you don't have but a couple people standing over there, and they're former players, some of them.
That's not quite true. I mean, there are intelligent people, but the problem is the system. It's not the reporters that are necessarily who are idiots, but it's the case of the system wanting massive amounts of, you know, whatever, you know, give me 10 inches, you know, 100 lines on this guy. And if the only thing you can think about is he's wearing a sleeve on his right elbow, then maybe that's a story. Okay. You got to come up with junk.
They
feed the machine and, they don't really care what's in there.
Yeah. I understand they have big holes, big news holes every day that they have to fill. But you just wish they put better quality information out there sometimes, because it gets ridiculous and sublime, and from sublime to I don't know what sometimes. I mean, and you've been in the press conferences when guys have asked questions that didn't matter, you know.
Yeah.
I also love the comment he gave us about the playoff format.
Yeah, you know, I was thinking about other things, but we had that today because I was my colleague said second stage, and I said best of seven second stage, which it technically is.
It technically is. I don't know what to do about writing that, because it sounds like there's going to be a seventh technical, I'm sorry, I'm doing air quotes here, a seventh game.
Right. There can't be, and he said it can't be a best of seven because there aren't seven games, and well, yeah, it is and it isn't. So, and not only that, is it best of seven, it's actually the best of seven unless there's a tie, in which case the tie goes to the champion. So it's actually the best of six and a half.
six and a half men.
Six and a half brains, I think. It's up. Anyway, they have why can't they have – I was listening to some old podcasts, and for another reason, which will be explained later, hopefully, or not. The question is, you were talking about the draft, and this was back in February.
Mm-hmm.
And you said, why can't it be more like a draft? Well, you know, I guess you could say the same thing. Why can't it be more like a playoff? Well, what we're talking about is, why can't it be more like an American sports draft? Why it can't be more like an American sports playoff? And the answer is, well, sure, it could be. But the same reason they have a messed up, ill-conceived draft is the same reason they have a messed up, ill-conceived playoffs. Now, I'm not under the belief that what we do in the States is necessarily the best, and is probably nothing near the best, because anybody who tells you, and I've had this conversation, the true winner should be decided by a 100 and you name it, game season. That's the best way to decide who is the best team. Okay, period. End of stuff. The real champion is decided in a best of seven series. That's the way. And neither person knows what they're talking about, because neither is true.
Yeah, I agree with that.
You decide which is the best team as you play 40,000 games. And then the best will almost always win. Well, you can't do that. So the answer, you fix, you know, short of flipping a coin, which is the worst solution, you play baseball games and you give a title to the best, to the team that wins the most. It is irrelevant who is the best. You make an arbitrary championship. The person who wins the most or wins the biggest games or wins the most big games wins it all, and they are the champion. They're not the best. Don't confuse the two. Move on. Now, the question is, of course, I'm sorry for the rant, the playoffs, is it the best? And we were talking about that at the office, and I think the best thing to do for Japanese baseball is to have the playoffs format, which is the most marketable.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I mean, and I think that's what they have.
Make it, and then market the heck out of the darn thing, which they don't do.
Yeah, it is marketable. They don't market it.
Okay, so get that and do that and build the game that way. Now, that would be the best for Japan. Now, as the system itself is it's bad. It is bad because it's hard to understand. That's never a good thing. Wayne Grassick and I were always talking about this possibility that sooner or later a series will be decided in the top of the 12th inning. And then they will have to play, you know, we had this question, what happens if, the champion, the league champion is the series is,
You're basically talking about this second stage of this climax series, in which if the teams tie, then the team that's the home team that gets all the games at home has already clinched.
The higher seed has essentially wins a tie.
Okay, so both stages. So yeah, if the team that's the home team has tied after the 12th inning, and we know we're not going to play a 13th inning, they've essentially clinched a trip to the Japan series or the next stage, yet they still play the bottom of the 12th.
Yes. And so we're saying, we, you know, very optimistically, wishfully thinking, said, well, the first time that happens, they'll change it. That's the first time it happens. Nobody even noticed.
Yeah, I remember when it happened.
Matsunaga ran out on the field and then was embarrassed when the game wasn't over because he was the only one with half a brain on the field.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I agree with you that playing a bunch of games only tells you, I mean, a bunch of regular season games only tells you which team is the deepest. You know, they're talented, but they're deep because they can endure all the injuries in the long season. Well, and then a short series only tells you who's hot at the time.
Well, I would go worse than, well, that is true. Who's hot? Again, what it tells you is largely influenced by random chance. Now, the random chance is much less in 140 seasons than in a 140 game season or 162 game season than it is in a 7-game series. But the fact is, they don't tell you that much. I mean, they're different animals. One's a marathon, one's a sprint. But all things, lots of weird things can happen in a sprint. Lots of weird things can happen in a marathon. And 140 games is an indication. You can separate most of the worst teams from most of the best teams.
Yeah. Yeah.
But who's the best team? Anybody who tells you the best team is decided by 160 game season is stating something that is not actually true.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we can't change it, just like we can't change the media voting for the wrong most valuable player.
What they can do with the media voting is eliminate people who don't vote the right way.
No, they can set up some guidelines.
Okay.
Yeah, they can issue some guidelines and say, make sure it's this player and that player. And that. I mean, we know... I think Hiroyuki Nakajima should be the MVP for the Pacific League this year, but we know he won't win it.
Yeah, I'll agree with that. I think, of course, there's no chance that Abe's not going to be the MVP, the deserving MVP. Every now and then you can't help but get it right, but...
We've got work to do to change these guys, but I always put my 2 cents in whenever I'm on the sidelines before games, and I talk to people about MVPs, and I talk to them about the playoff format, and I talk to them about whatever I can because I want change. I want to see change, and I want to instill those ideas in them and have them. I mean, because it's just us. There's no way we can change it by ourselves.
I didn't, like, go around tell everybody I was the only person who voted for Abe.
Well,
I think what I will do is ask them the question, what's the difference between Abe this year and last year? It's a great question. The answer is not very much.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Now, in case for those of you who don't know, the first stage and the second stage are all played at the higher seed's home field. And then the second stage includes a one-game advantage for the league champion. And so this game that's not played on the field, and I remember the first year we had it, I asked the editor on the desk, I said, hey, do we call this game 2 or game 1? Because this is game 2 in reality, but game 1 on the field. And they said, what are the Japanese papers calling it? They said game 1. And he says, okay, well, say game 1. I said, well, then we're going to end up when they win 3 games, let's say they sweep, they swept the 7-game series 3-0.
Right.
And he said, well, no, just add it in. And I said, well, how do we add in that it's, you know, game two, but it's actually game 1 on the field? I mean, how do you do that? And so we just always wrote in with the 1-game advantage, and we had to write it in all the time. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah, and they really do need to find something that's better. Of course, the story how they got the 1-game advantage was in 2006 when the Pacific League playoffs started, and the first 2 years, the regular season champ got knocked out. And then so they changed it, and prior to that, Sadaharu Oh was the manager of that team.
Yeah, of course, it just happened to be the Hawks.
It had to be the Hawks, and Sadaharu Oh, to be frank, was a terrible postseason manager. He was terrible managing a team in a short series. And it's not really a big shock that they lost both of the series. But anyway, so in 2000, they get the game advantage that they really wanted, and they find themselves the third place team. They advance to, they beat the Lions and advance to play then it was a best of five series in Sapporo, and they lost in two games.
Yeah, so essentially all these changes were made to help teams like that along, and now we end up with this. But I want to move along now to the Fighters, and they clinched this thing while I was out of the country, so congratulations to them. And they did it in the most awkward way possible, when they didn't have a game and the Lions lost.
Yeah, not only did they not have a game, but they lost their last game before that. And then the Lions lost two games, and that was that.
Wow. But, you know, and we were talking before we started taping, and we said, hey, you know, this team is not all that much different than it was last year. I mean, yoo-hoo.
You know, they put together a great effort because, you know, they did what, again, like the theory of, like, it's very easy. You can lose a season very easily if you stop playing and give up and lose confidence and you lose Yu Darvish. It's easy to think, well, we have to step back a bit. You know, we have to rebuild or something. But, you know, they did exactly what the Fighters did in 2007. They lost the Pacific League MVP, and they just went and won the league again.
Yeah, that was Michihiro Ogasawara who went to the Giants, and then they repeated. So, yeah, they lost Yu Darvish. They had a new manager coming in, first-year guy, and he wins. And they were still missing Kensuke Tanaka down the stretch, and they overcome a lot of things to get here. And congratulations to them. But I look around, and I like the outfield defense. I like some of the infield defense, but they didn't have those consistent efforts. And the reason I brought up Michio Yoshikawa for MVP was the fact that they didn't really have a position player who stood out this season at all.
Well, they did. They didn't. The problem is they stood out in bits and pieces. They didn't have a guy who was dominant all season.
That's what I meant. I mean, Sho Nakata was a good player
in the last 3 months. Agreed. I mean, there are guys that had Inaba carried the team in the first 2 months. He was just dynamite.
And Sho Nakata had I mean, when you look at the final numbers, he had a good season, but he had a very poor start, and he had to overcome that.
So,
what's that?
He didn't hit for average at all, and Tanaka got off to a decent start, and then he got hurt. And then Yoshui Toi he came back as player of the month for September, and deservingly so.
Yeah, he was awesome in September.
Player who was in the next zip code to him was Shinosuke Abe, who was on his own world.
Yeah.
So that was quite good, and I know you had complained about him having a soft average. He didn't hit for a lot of power early season, but he sure did the second half. It was just like everything was an extra base hit. Of course, he has the steals. He has the great play in the outfield. They had a lot of good things.
Itoi, you know, I said soft, but I also said quiet. I mean, he was getting his hits, and he was keeping his average above 300, but he wasn't really producing. You know, he wasn't involved in runs as much. But then in September, it turned around.
Well,
definitely turned around.
Okay. Well, sometimes there are things that are beyond one's control. So I'm, you know, chance situations and the pitches you get and
sure.
whatnot. So I'm not going to be too critical of that because I don't know all the things that are going in. I don't know a tenth of the things that are going into it. So,
right.
I do remember that comment, but I'll pass on that now. But you know, they had a lot of things going on. They had
Yuki Saito on opening day, a mistake, and a guy who's not even going to pitch in the postseason. I saw.
Yuki Saito. Well, yeah, he's
off the postseason roster.
He went from the hero of the season to the complete and total failure.
Yeah, somebody asked me, has anyone, this was a long time back, but has anyone who started on opening day been demoted to the minors in the second half of the season and, you know, had trouble reemerging and then in this situation you won't be on the postseason roster?
All the time, but it's usually with first year players or second, well,
Saito's opening day?
Opening day starters, sure, and be gone 3 days later because the manager, usually because they got guys that aren't good, they'll often take guys who are really good in the spring. And if they don't have a established player at the position, they give the guy a job. And the reason, you know, they were really good in the spring is they were trying to impress everybody. And they got hot, you know, and balls bounced their way, and they had a couple of good swings, and now they're on the opening day roster, and they're not good enough, and they can't make the adjustments. They're not good enough, or they can't make the adjustments, and they fall flat on their face, and then 3 weeks into the season, they're on the farm team for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I'm talking about starting pitcher. I'm talking about a guy who starts on opening day and then ends up.
He's a pretty weird opening day starter, if you ask me, because he's really not that good.
Well. But,
that was the policy.
That was, if you ask both of us, we both had trouble with it.
Yeah, so does it happen? Yeah, now and then. It's not completely uncommon. I mean, there are some, I think Kenjiro Kawasaki started 1 year for the Dragons.
Yeah. Well, I think it's kudos to Hideki Kuriyama. You know, they don't really have a star player, and he really had to mix and match a lot during the season and really have his finger on the pulse of his team. And I think he did an okay job, I think.
Well, he's a, yeah, I can't say much about it. I've never spoken with the man. I did have a chat with the head of baseball operations for the Fighters. And I said, you know, it was quite a, you know, it turned out to be quite a successful match for your team. And he said, you know, it's very easy for us to know, we know what we want in a manager, but it's very hard to find because we have so many, criteria.
Yeah.
They have very specific criteria about what they want from a manager. And basically two of the things are, somebody who's a really good communicator and somebody who knows what the limits to his authority are.
Mm.
They're not going to make any deals without the manager's, permission, without the manager's consent, but they're in charge of the player selection.
Okay. Well, good luck to them in the second stage. They're going to be playing that at home. Now, the playoffs start on the 13th, both in the Pacific League and the Central League. Now, at Cebu Dome, the SoftBank Hawks, who actually had more wins than the Lions. Did you notice that?
I did not, but
I think it was 63 wins and the Lions had 63 wins. The Hawks had 64.
That's not a big deal. I mean,
not a big deal. Just shows you how much parity there was in the Pacific League. And I want to talk about our predictions for that series. Now, I'm predicting that the Lions are going to make it through. And I see Setsu and Kishi going against each other in that first game, and then Otonari and Makita in the second game. And then after that, I don't know who's going to throw that third game for SoftBank. It could be Arakaki. It could be Yamada. It could be even Sho Iwasaki if he gets out of the doghouse. I don't know.
Well, if it's questionable for the Hawks, it's a complete mystery for the Lions.
To have Ishii down for the game for that clincher because he's the seasoned veteran. Haha. But I also have Yusei Kikuchi down there, so maybe they might tandem it. I don't know.
Ishii's a single veteran. I think the seasoned veteran. I think the seasoning you're talking about is Loco Weed.
Oh, no. Why do you constantly beat the man with things? You verbally attack him. Oh, well. I understand it. I just, you know.
He's just craziness prone.
But I don't think they're going to let guys like Nakajima and Okawari-kun beat them. I think it's going to be guys like Herman and Ortiz who are really skilled enough hitters to generate the runs that they need. And I think they're going to get through, even though Nobuhira Matsuda is back for the SoftBank Hawks, and that's a big deal for them because he's a 300 hitter who changes their lineup.
Yeah, he did come back the other day, and Takeya Nakamura, although he hit a couple of home runs in the last week, I don't know that his swing is all that good. He's was missing. Maybe that was it. Because I haven't seen him play for about a week and a half now. But gosh, he was missing so many good pitches. I mean, so many mistakes in the series against the Fighters at Cebu Dome that it was scary.
Matsuda was.
Takuya Nakamura.
Nakamura, okay. We'll see. All right, SoftBank was 13-11 this year against Cebu, and they were 7-4 against them at Cebu Dome.
Which tells me...
I'm just giving you the numbers what they were.
Oh, I'm good with that. I think they're certainly not going to come in with a hang-up that they can't win there.
Certainly, and Setsu was 4-0 against the Lions this season.
Yeah, well, that's...
That's Setsu. Yeah, he's good. So just putting that out there, that's what... But I'm picking the Lions to get through this series, and we'll see what they bring up to Sapporo Dome and try to throw out there in that first game in that series, which they really need to win.
I'm going to go with the Hawks simply because they've been playing better. It's hard to pick these two teams. It seems like none of them have been playing particularly well in the last month. But Falkenberg is back. I haven't seen him pitch. I believe he did pitch the other day. That's a step. I think their bullpen's going to have some rest. I think, regardless of the instability of their starting rotation, they got a bunch of guys who can pitch.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
The Lions are in a case where, once they get past the Kishi, who's been pitching poorly, and they get past Makita, who's been okay, that, who's next is, I don't know.
Well, I disagree. I think Kishi had a poor, his last start was poor, but before that he was, the two starts previous to that, maybe even three, were quality starts. I think he was pitching okay. But,
if you like the Lions, I'll go with the Hawks.
Okay. In the Central League, the Dragons are going to be playing host to the Yakult Swallows. I know you don't want to hear their season numbers. What was it? It was 30.
The Swallows do play well against the Dragons. They play very well against them. They're the only Central League team that doesn't mind playing in Nagoya Dome.
Yeah.
The Dragons are a better team, to be honest. I think the Swallows are, The Swallows have more talent, but right now I think it's a case of, Dragon's been there, done that. I think the guys like Ibata, although Ibata has been hurt, he'll be back. That's a question mark for me, is Ibata. But they got, I like the talent base. The pitching staff, both pitching staffs are pretty much ravaged with injuries. Tateyama's he'll be ready.
Can I do my pitching matchups?
Go ahead.
Okay, I got Tateyama versus Nakata in game one.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's going to happen, but we'll see. Then Muranaka versus Kawakami in game two.
Yeah, Kawakami has pitched very well his last two games.
And then Akagawa.
Oh.
And I don't know who the Dragons would throw out there. I'm thinking Shinji Iwata, but I could also see Yamauchi out there. I could see Soto out there if he's healthy. I don't know.
I think we're not going to see Akagawa as a starter. I think Ishikawa has pitched well enough that he's going to get a start.
Yeah. Okay.
I do like the Swallows starting pitching a little better. Maybe I'm just nervous because the Swallows are the team that I have the biggest emotional attachment to, and I'm nervous about picking them. But, this one's really 50-50 for me. I think the Dragons are a better team. Tony Blanco's a game changer. If he's healthy, he's never healthy. He's rarely ever healthy. He's always got something broken or something bruised.
Mm-hmm.
But, he's the big power guy on the field, although it's hard. Valentin is back and hitting baseball, so I'm no doubt. I don't think he's coming back.
All right. Well, I see Tateyama pitching really well in that first game. I guess everything hinges on that game.
But I certainly see the way that the Swallows starters have been pitching, that this could be Tateyama, goes seven innings, and Ishikawa goes six the next day, and that's probably enough. If they can limit Oshimoto's vulnerability there, they don't see him much, then they should be okay. But they have a decent bullpen. I mean, the Dragons bullpen right now is fairly sharp. Everybody's hitting. Sal is apparently healthy. Iwase is doing well.
I disagree with that. He's not healthy, but he's throwing. And he's not nearly the guy he was last year. He's throwing a bunch. Last year he used to throw a lot of hard stuff.
Last year, the reason he's different is because last year he was abducted by space aliens.
I don't know what that means, but last year he threw a lot of hard stuff, and this year, when I did see him pitch, he was throwing a lot of change-ups and curves and all speed, you know, sliders and stuff that he hasn't thrown before. He's been a forkball, fastball guy, and he's changed his whole approach, and I don't know if it's because he's not 100% healthy or because he's going to try to stop throwing all those forkballs. I don't know what the reason is, but I did see a difference, and he's not nearly the guy he was last year.
Well, yeah, that would be unusual if anybody is as good as he was last year. So impressive that, I mean, just people went crazy. You know, people just went bananas about him. With, you know, what awards? I'm surprised he's not the Prime Minister of Japan by now.
He had a chance, probably. So I could easily see Tateyama winning game one and Muranaka. Remember, he shut out the Dragons back-to-back games earlier in, I think it was September, somewhere in there. He had 18 innings pitched, three or four hits, six hits allowed or something crazy like that. So I could see this series being over in two if those guys pitch well. If not, you know, maybe the Dragons will get one of those games and then Ishikawa will wrap it up for them in game three. So I see the Swallows advancing to Tokyo.
I see that too, and I think one of the factors here that I do like is I like, as a manager, I like Ogawa a lot more than I like Takagi. I just can't get over, I can't shake the impression that Takagi has any brain cells left. So.
All right, let's talk about a big firing in the United States that occurred this past week while I was home, and we'll talk about it real quick. Bobby Valentine has the boot print in his backside as he leaves Boston.
Yeah, that's really sad because, you know somebody and you like somebody, it's really hard to see them suffer. I don't know if he suffered as much. I'll bet he did. It could not possibly have been as bad as 2009 when, you know, because as he came out and said, everybody tried hard, and I think that's true, but they didn't get the results in 2009 with the Marines. It was a case of a lot of people trying to play games and a lot of people trying to play games that would get him out of the Marines uniform.
Yeah, the only games that were going on were not even on the field. I think there were more games off the field.
And sabotage and Nobody wanted the Red Sox to fail. Everybody just wanted, I think, had a different vision of how the team needed to succeed.
Well, I tell you where I think he got in trouble was Bobby thinks, and this is no slight on him, it's a good thing to be confident. He thinks he's not only the smartest guy in the room, he thinks he's the smartest guy in the stadium, and he thinks he's the smartest guy watching the games. And he might be just as smart as some other people, but I don't think he's that much smarter than they are. And he tried to mouth his way out of certain situations that he backed himself into corners with. You got Dustin Pedroia saying things like that might work in Japan. And that was early on. He said some negative things about Kevin Youkilis. And I don't, you know, someone said on a sports program back home that I saw, and I actually turned on Boston radio and was listening into some of the people call in, and they said, you know, you can't treat a player at the level of Kevin Youkilis the way he did verbally. And win the team over. And I think he lost the team early on, and that's why you might have had some underperformers. I don't think they really had that passion to play for him. It's not that they didn't want to win, but you need something extra, you know, when you're playing the Yankees.
We need to have something extra anyways. I mean, certainly, and I've said this before, that you need an effort that, in order to get extra effort, you have to have the feeling that everybody is pulling their weight and everybody is sacrificing for the team's good. If you're going to do it, you know, it's human nature to do the easy thing, and to do the hard thing, you need that emotional
push.
That we're all in this together. We're doing this for something that's bigger than ourselves.
Yeah.
And you know, the odd thing is, and this is the paradox about Bobby, is that nobody believes this more than him. Nobody believes that this is about the littlest guy and the biggest guy all pulling together.
Yeah.
But he also has that supreme, that confidence, you know, that he is the smart guy. That I won't say he is the smart guy, that he is a smart guy, and that things are gonna work out. And he knows that things aren't always gonna work out because that's the way the world works. And but sometimes when things don't go according to plan, there's always somebody standing next to him saying, okay, Mr. Smart Guy, how come the ball didn't bounce the right way?
Yeah. Well, they had high expectations for the team, and so did he. And he gets way too much blame for a bullpen that just failed miserably and starting pitching that was iffy and players who just didn't hit. But as we say goodbye to Bobby Babel and...
I hate that expression, but that's a, is it? I mean, I can't stop you. It's yours, man.
It is. It's what it is. I mean, he tries to control every little thing, things that probably he didn't need to control, but we have to move on. He's got to move on too. Good luck finding another team. I hope he does. I hope this doesn't damage his reputation that he can't manage in the States, or people start saying that, because I think he can manage very well in the States, and I think we want to have him back here in Japan as well, as we talked to Larry Rocha, a front office exec with the Marines when Bobby was here, and he said in the off season that he expects Bobby to come back to Japan sometime, and we hope that he does.
I hope he does too, and not like one of his little fundraising or charity things. I wanted him to be here in the manager. I mean, he was, this is a man who loves Japan and loves nothing better than to give Japanese baseball its due. I wish he was here managing in Japan so he could be the guy to raise his hand and say, well, I'll manage Japan in the WBC. Mm-hmm. Have to hire, you know, have bring somebody back to life.
Whoa. All right, well, before we talk about that, I want to talk about Alex Ramirez. It looks like I'm going to win this bet.
Deal. He's not going to play the rest of the season. So
it looks like I'm going to win this bet. He's not going to reach 2,000 hits. And I went back looking in the show's volume 2, of course, show number 2, that we talked about it, and we bet a dinner. And I'm not happy that I'm going to go out and have steak on Jim's dime. I mean,
I'm happy. I'm just not happy we're going to go out and have a steak, because I'm not a fan of that place. So that's why that's another subject. It's a good excuse for me to go out and have a good time with my buddy. So that's good enough for me.
Good. I look forward to seeing Alex come back next year and have a good year and get to 2 milestones. Hopefully he can hit a bunch of home runs. I think we wrote him off for last year because we thought it was maybe a little bit too many home runs. But if he can stay healthy and play in that bandbox in Yokohama, I think he can reach his home run milestone.
Got about half. So that's still going to be a hard one, even for Nick. I think that's going to be tough for next year as well, but not out of reach. The 2,000 hits thing was so close. I mean, the one bad bump, I think he was really going for it. And I think he had a chance of hitting it by his 38th birthday. You know, he says it's his 38th birthday. That's his story, and I'm sticking with it.
All right. Really quickly, we want to touch on some of the retirements that, at least the ones that I saw. Kazuki Fukuchi of the Swallows is leaving. I think we talked about Makoto Imaoka of Hanshin, and he played with the Marines. Michael Nakamura.
Yeah.
Former Fighters, Lions, and Giants right-hander. Then today I saw that Hirotoshi Kitagawa, formerly of Hanshin and also of Oryx, is going to retire. And you told me about Hiroshi Hirao of the Seibu Lions.
Interesting. Imoka never played for anybody other than the Tigers. He didn't really play for the Marines much.
Not much at all.
He's an interesting case. There's a guy who proved he could really play after the team gave him up because they didn't think he was any good. And that wasn't the manager. The manager said, this guy is like, are we going to use this guy? And he says, well, he's fast, but he's not really a good player. Okay, well, let's just get to play somebody somewhere else. But that chance proved that the guys who said he couldn't play didn't know what they were talking about. Okay, same thing with Hirotoshi Kitagawa. Fukuchi, anyway, went on to the Seibu Lions and the Yakult Swallows. He was a very good player for the Seibu Lions. And then he went to the Yakult Swallows as compensation for the acquisition of my favorite pitcher, Kazuhisa Ishii.
Oh, man. All right. So were there any others that I missed?
No, I think that's it. We have had a great career after the Hanshin Tigers traded him away. Hiroshi Rao had a decent career after the Hanshin Tigers traded him away. and was the MVP of the 2008 Japan Series, and a smiling guy, you know, wasn't a big talker, but the other, he's kind of taciturn guy, but Fukuchi Kitagawa, Michael Nakamura, and Hiragana, miss all those guys.
I miss them.
Real gentlemen.
All right, talking about another real gentleman. The WBC skipper is likely to be named on Wednesday, according to sources.
Yep.
That will be Koji Yamamoto, the former Hiroshima Carp star and manager.
Yeah, he was a star as a manager. He was. We'll talk about this next show, I think. Too long to get into.
And it'll probably be announced on Wednesday.
Day after the regular season is completed.
Okay. Now, we did have a question that we had last week and we pushed over to this week, so let's get to it with fielding questions. Okay, it's our correspondent out in Tokorozawa, Mike, and he sent us this.
Hello, John and Jim. This is Mike from Tokorozawa again, living and dying with the Lions. This is getting exciting and a little bit too much for my old ticker. You know, I'm sitting here actually, though, watching Nippon Ham and SoftBank playing, and Willie Mulpania was just up. And this brought me to a question that I'd like to ask you guys. And, I've never actually heard anybody in the baseball media ever address this. Why do players spit on the field? And not Japanese players, foreign guys, like Willie Mulpania. When he's standing at the plate, he looks like a fire hydrant going off, spewing saliva all over the place. It's disgusting. Yet I never see Japanese players doing it. Is it just that foreign players have more saliva and Japanese players don't? I mean, what's the reason for that? Could you guys ask one of these players why they do this? It's disgusting. Anyway, thanks very much. Love the show. See ya.
Well, Mike, you know what? We get lots of questions. We've gotten lots of questions over the past year plus. This is the strangest.
Yeah, it wasn't quite what I expected.
But I did my due diligence, and I went on and searched, and I can tell you that I couldn't find anything that says that players from a certain region of the world have more saliva than other players. It said that most of the reason why most players spit is because of chewing tobacco or bubble gum creates a lot of saliva, and most Japanese players don't use either of those things, so they don't generate so much saliva in their mouths.
Wow, that's an answer. I think it's the chewing tobacco is the big one, and fewer and fewer players now are using it. So we've had a few pretty good spitters.
We have had it, but you know what? To be honest, it's a guy thing, and I don't even see it happening. I don't pay attention to it. I never noticed it, and I don't think you should either. I think you should be more focused on where the location of those pitches are that your Lions pitchers are throwing, and who's swinging at bad pitches out of the zone, and you won't have time to look at them spitting when you're trying to figure out what's coming next and what the managers are going to do. I don't even see it. I'm sorry, it didn't bother me at all. I don't know that it's disgusting at all. It's just what baseball players do. I think football players spit a lot. We just don't see it because the cameras don't focus on all the players like they do in baseball. Basketball players are not able to spit as much, but they do too because the court gets dusty and they put a little saliva on the floor to clean off the bottoms of their shoes. Some of them wipe the bottom of their shoes with their hands and others spit on the floor and get their shoes squeaky clean that way. So I just think we see it more in baseball.
Well, you do because you're focused on the batter usually, and the batter's sitting there spitting. And as to advice about what Mike should focus on, I don't really have any. I mean, you know, you just enjoy the game. And if the spitting gets in the way, well, you kind of got to take it, you know, it's like everything else. We'd like the game to be a little better. I mean, certainly, yeah, am I happy to be sitting there with my kids watching TV on the hypothetical thing that I had kids watching TV and watching people spit and hoping they don't decide to emulate the players on the living room floor.
House train them. House train them, Jim.
Spitting on the carpet, which does, you know, looks kind of like carpet squares and could be mistaken for somebody's living room, you know, cheap living room rug.
All right, enough. We'll stop you there. We'll spit out a better answer if you guys send in some questions next week. Send them to
another one of those John jokes. Questions.
You get the John jokes without sending in questions. All right, send it to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Send us an MP3 just like Mike and Tokorozawa did, and we'll play it on the show.
All right, man.
All right. Thanks a lot for listening. We'll talk to you next week. Enjoy your playoffs.
Oh, very good.